last 5 or 10 years, I believed in a God who literally answers our prayers. Now, I never believed this intellectually, not even as a kid. That's not the kind of understanding of God taught in my liberal church as a child. I never have intellectually pictured some Gary Larson-like God figure, like up here, sitting at a computer ready to push any number of keys. This happens to be, in this case, he's ready to push the smite key. And I never believed that this sort of God had the potential to be influenced by people in making those decisions. Just none of that ever really made sense intellectually. But I can tell that emotionally, I believed in a God who literally answers prayers. I know this because when the chips were down, I would pray for help. If I was in a pickle on the playground or on a plane bouncing in turbulence or a loved one was desperately sick, I would find myself phoning God for help. Please, God, distract this big kid who's about to push me off the merry-go-round. Please, God, help this plane get through the turbulence and land safely. Please, God, help my mother recover from this stroke. The results were mixed. The most effective prayer was the big kid on the merry-go-round. This kid was really big, like 6'6 in elementary school. He ended up 7 feet tall, seriously. And just as he was coming toward me, because I had done something to cause offense to him, just then, he happened to fall off the merry-go-round backwards, hit the back of his head on the base of the merry-go-round, and probably had a concussion. So I concluded that either God or I had a lot of powers. But other times the prayers did not really work quite so well. Though I have to admit, to date, every plane I have flown on has successfully landed. Also, if I'm honest, I have to admit that once in a while, envy has gotten the best of me, and I have prayed for things that I desperately want, like the person I have a crush on to ask me out, like a new car I lusted after, like a head of hair like Jim Klinkert's. So I'm not proud of this. Well, it dawned on me recently that I no longer say this sort of crisis or envy-inspired prayer. Maybe my emotions have caught up with my intellect, and it's not that I have moments where supernatural help would not be welcome. I certainly have those moments. But I just don't pray like that anymore, even in those moments. Praying for help and rescue, that just is no longer my default response to life's crises. So does this signal the demise of my prayer life? Absolutely not. Even though intellectually and emotionally I believe less than ever in the kind of God who can fix or save or grant things, I find myself praying more often, not less. I don't pray when the chips are down anymore. I don't pray for specific fixes. I don't pray for things I want. Instead, I pray when I'm grateful. I pray when I am in need of discernment. I pray when I need a reminder of who I want to be and what my deepest values are. I pray when I'm deeply aware of the wonder of life, or more importantly, when I need to become aware of life's wonder because I'm just sort of going through life obliviously. I pray when I feel stuck or immobilized and need to remember to breathe and to take that next tiny baby step forward. I pray when I'm concerned for someone else, not for that person to be fixed or healed, but for that person's well-being. I pray when my spirit feels parched and I am in need of some deep sustenance. My prayers are a lot less specific than the old crisis mode prayers. somewhere along the line, I realized that I'm actually not smart enough to know what specifically to pray for anyway. Maybe the best thing for my elderly mom lying in the hospital bed after a stroke is dying, not recovering just to limp along until the next catastrophic illness. Who's to know? Not me. Probably not any of us. None of us are that smart. I'm reminded of the Taoist story about the farmer. This farmer had only one horse, and one day his horse ran away. The neighbors came to console him upon this terrible loss. The farmer said, "What makes you think this is so terrible?" A month later, the horse came home, this time bringing with her two beautiful wild horses. The neighbors celebrated the farmer's good fortune. The farmer said, "What makes you think this is good fortune?" The farmer's son was thrown from one of the wild horses and broke his leg. "Such bad luck," the farmer's neighbors lamented. The farmer said, "What makes you think this is bad?" A war came and every able-bodied man was conscripted and went into battle. Only the farmer's son, because of his broken leg, remained at home, and every last soldier in the unit he would have joined perished in the war. So who is to know what's best? The farmer could have prayed for his horse not to run away, or prayed for his son not to get injured riding the wild horse. But the farmer, like all of us, cannot really see what might be best. Even if God is sitting at a computer somewhere and might be inclined to hit the key that I tell God to hit, which I don't believe, how do I know that in the end I would choose the right key? I have no idea. None of us do. So with my new kind of prayer, I find that I care less and less about who or what might be on the receiving end of my prayer. Maybe it's nothing more than my inner self. I'm okay with that. Maybe it's Emerson's oversoul, that divine spark that is in you and me and everyone. Maybe it's the goddess. Maybe it's love with a capital L, or the spirit of life. It's simply a fiction, and there's nobody or thing on the other end. Whatever. I really don't care. My prayers are not about getting answers or needs met anyway. So I don't give a rip who's on the receiving end, or even if there is someone there. Being agnostic does not impact my prayers at all, and neither would deciding once and for all I'm atheist. I'd still be praying in the same way. So for me, what is prayer? More than anything, prayer is paying attention and acknowledging and naming what's going on around me and especially within me. It helps me name and own what I'm feeling: fear, concern, joy, love, peace, whatever it is. Prayer also helps me be aware of the blessings in my life, especially those smaller blessings which I tend to overlook. It helps me think about what's most important in my life and how I'm tending to that which is most important. It helps me contemplate whom I'm concerned about. It helps center me. It helps calm me when the seas of life get choppy. And there's really nothing mysterious or magical about any of this. Simply put, for me, prayer helps me get in touch with myself, with others, with what's going on near and far, with the Great Spirit, if there is such a thing. Joy Harjo's poem that Gina Maria read captures this essence well. When we pray, you open your whole self to sky, to earth, to sun, to moon, to one whole voice that is you. There doesn't have to be anything supernatural about it. Not as far as I'm concerned. In the movie Harold and Maude, Harold asks Maude if she prays. "Pray? No," she answers, "I communicate." So she communicates with her deepest self, with the universe. For me, that's like getting in touch. I'm okay that Maud does not label that prayer. I do. She doesn't. That's okay. So each day I try to set aside some time for prayer. I usually start by becoming aware of my breath and then taking some deep breaths. The Buddhists are right. There is such spiritual power in simply tending to this most basic element of our life, breathing in and breathing out. It strips everything else away. And after being attentive to my breath for a bit, then I'll kind of check in with what's going on inside, emotionally, thoughts, physically. It's amazing, sometimes I'd stop and think, wow, I feel physically great today, or I feel some pain that I had not even been conscious of. Then I'll do an inventory of what I'm thankful for at the moment, and I always notice that things surface which I otherwise would have been oblivious to. Things surface which I take for granted. And I think that taking things for granted in life is a deadly sin. It kills relationships. It kills gratitude. It kills our spirits. A gratitude inventory is the perfect antidote. And then I try to contemplate the primary relationships in my life and what I might do today to strengthen them. And it's interesting, when I take the time to do this, I tend to be a much better spouse, father, son, friend, colleague. And when I don't, it doesn't always work out that well, let's just say. And then I contemplate my deepest values and whether I'm actually living in accordance with them. And if not, what can I do today to take a step toward living in accordance with my values? And then I lift up those I'm concerned about, including you, when you are suffering. I say a prayer for the well-being of those I'm concerned about. Joys and Concerns each week provides me for the following week with great fodder for my prayer life. And I don't know whether praying for a fellowship member who has cancer helps him or her get cured in any way. I'm not even praying for that. But it helps me get in touch with compassion for that person within. And that in turn helps me to then reach out with love, with compassion. That's all I need from this sort of prayer. It's not miraculous. Unless you count love as a miracle, which, come to think of it, I kind of do. This summer, more than usual, the world feels like it's in particularly bad shape. Ukraine, Gaza, religious fanatics taking over broad swaths of land in Syria and Iraq, children risking their lives to get into this country and then running into walls and hatred. Ferguson, a passenger plane shot down. The announcement this last week that there's more than 50 million refugees from war worldwide. It's overwhelming. I feel it. I bet a lot of you do. And prayer helps me in such times. In my prayer time, I contemplate the people who are suffering. I try to picture them, picture what their lives are like. This is not fun prayer. It's hard. But it kindles my compassion for others. Maybe in my prayer life, I can walk a mile in their shoes, or at least a couple feet. Then I ask myself a simple question. What can I do today to help? I listen to the still small voice within and try to discern what small, probably indirect thing I can do. Maybe it's something as simple as deciding that I will take care of the sticks my neighbor tossed into my yard rather than tossing them back into his yard. I know this is not going to solve the world's problems, but it's a place to start for me. And if I'm feuding with my neighbor, well, that feels like, yeah, lower stakes, but a pretty related version of what's going on in Ukraine or Gaza. Prayer helps me realize this. It helps me find that one little thing to do. Now, this way I pray may sound very elaborate, and many days I don't go through the whole cycle. Some days I just breathe. Just spend a minute tending to breath, and that's enough. Some days it's good to keep it simple. Anne Lamott says that her prayer life can be boiled down to three words: help, thanks, wow. I like that. That's a pretty simple formula. She lifts up another woman she knows who in the morning prays, whatever, as in, I think, whatever will be, and then at the end of the day, oh well. Some days that's perfect. So in one of his most remarkable poems, the Sufi mystic Rumi writes, "Let the beauty we love be what we do. There are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground." I realized this week that those two lines of poetry kind of sum up a lot about what I believe. And prayer helps the beauty that I love actually become what I do. It's one of the ways I choose to kneel and kiss the ground. So if prayer is something that works for you, great. If you pray in a different way from mine, great. If meditation is your thing, great. I don't care what you do, but I hope that you do something spiritual. Because translating the beauty you love into what you do, well, that doesn't just happen by accident. Find something.